Our study tonight is out of Isaiah chapter 7, verses 1 through 9, God's promise of the long-term fall of King Ahaz's immediately dreaded foes. People who lead in the institution of marriage, family, business, church, or government at times face the pressure of threatening foes to their leadership, and this opposition can give them tremendous anxiety. One in such a position is tempted to handle this threat by relying on some immediate or humanly obtainable resource that is greater than the foe. But God offers a better way in Isaiah 7:1-9, and we view it for our insight. I want to read the passage, and then we will look at it. Isaiah chapter 7, verses 1 through 9. And it came to pass in the days of Ahaz, the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of Judah, that Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, went up toward Jerusalem to wage war against it, but could not prevail against it. And it was told the house of David, saying, Syria is confederate with Ephraim. And his heart was moved, and the heart of his people, as the trees of the wood are moved with the wind. Then said the Lord unto Isaiah, Go forth now to meet Ahaz, you, and Shear-Jashub your son, at the end of the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the fuller's field. And say unto him, Take heed, and be quiet. Fear not, neither be faint-hearted, for the two tails of these smoking firebrands, for the fierce anger of Rezin of Syria, and of the son of Remaliah. Because Syria, Ephraim, and the son of Remaliah have taken evil counsel against you, saying, Let us go up against Judah, and vex it, and let us make a breach therein for us, in others break through the wall, and set a king in the midst of it, even the son of Tabeel. Thus saith the Lord God, It shall not stand, neither shall it come to pass. For the head of Syria is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is Rezin. And within 65 years, at 65 years, shall Ephraim be broken, and it will not be a people. The head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is Remaliah's son. If you will not believe, surely you will not be established. Okay, what's going on here? As background to Isaiah 7:1-9, the passage that we just read, Judah's King Ahaz faced an immediate life-threatening threat to his rule. Rezin, who is the king of the Gentile nation of Aram, which is northeast of the northern kingdom of Israel, had made an alliance with Pekah, king of the northern kingdom of Israel. This is in the days, remember, when the northern kingdom had split away from the southern kingdom of Judah. To replace the southern kingdom of Judah's King Ahaz with their own puppet king, known simply as the son of Tabeel. We don't know who this man was that they wanted to put in a puppet king, but this would have required the death of Ahaz. They would have executed Ahaz and put this other guy in power. So this is a life-threatening situation for Ahaz. Ahaz and the people in Judah were terrified at this threat. And from 2 Kings 16:7, where we find out later that he actually requested from the king of Assyria help to fight against this union of the Arameans and Israel, we presume that Ahaz was right now tempted to ask Assyria to assist his cause by attacking the Aram-Israeli alliance. Now we know from a number of Old Testament passages that God did not want Israel or Judah looking to foreign alliances in order to handle their situations with war. He wanted them to trust him. So, God sent the prophet Isaiah to King Ahaz to call him to trust in the Lord for security, calling Ahaz to take the long-term view of the crisis he faced, to see it from God's perspective so as to trust in the Lord. So, God sent Isaiah and his son Shear-Jashub to talk to Ahaz, who was by the aqueduct of the upper pool, in an event full of signs to teach Ahaz to trust in God by adopting God's long-term view of his crisis. Now, the name of Isaiah's son, Shear-Jashub, means a remnant shall return, and it speaks of the promise that a remnant of Israel would return to the land of Israel from her future Assyrian captivity after Assyria's subsequent fall. We know this because it's predicted in a coming chapter in Isaiah chapter 10, verses 20 to 23. Now, Ahaz was possibly then considering calling on Assyria's king for help against the Aram and Israel alliance. So this is a foolish consideration in view of the long-term fact that God would see Israel through not only her coming fall and captivity in Assyria, but beyond the demise and the fall of Assyria itself. So from God's perspective, this is really foolish to try to think about calling on Assyria. Assyria is set to be destroyed. See? Israel, who's going to be taken captive by Assyria, is eventually going to outlive Assyria, and she's going to be brought back into the land. Well, Ahaz was beside the aqueduct of the upper pool. This was a reservoir that held water from the spring Gihon that was right outside of the Jerusalem city wall. And he was inspecting the city water supply in the event of an attack by Aram and Israel. This was the same spot where nearly 33 years later, the spokesman of Assyria's king Sennacherib would hurl his taunt to the people of Jerusalem not to trust in God, as Judah's later king Hezekiah would tell them. And of course, after that taunt, God himself would slay 185,000 Assyrian soldiers and deliver the city without the Assyrians ever having to attack it. That's in Isaiah chapters 36 and 37. So the very fact that he's going out and talking to this man by this pool at this time, in view of the fact that 33 years later, there's going to be this wicked man, Rabshakeh, who's going to taunt Israel from that, or Judah from that point, and God is going to turn the tables on the Assyrians. This is an amazing thing. From the wide-angle lens, from the long-term perspective, it's absolutely foolish for Ahaz not to trust the Lord, because God is going to give tremendous deliverances for them, and both of these in regards to the nation of Syria. Well, Isaiah then called for Ahaz to be careful, to keep calm, and don't be afraid, that he not lose heart at the threat of Rezin of Aram and Pekah of the northern kingdom of Israel. They were just like smoldering stubs of firewood that would soon be gone. We're burning firewood in our wood insert right now. And it's interesting, when the wood gets down there and it's just smoldering brands, if you open up the door and you take the poker and you hit it, it just shatters. And it doesn't take long and it begins to burn up. And that's what these two men were like. In fact, there's evidence that within, I think, 2 or 3 years, both of these men were dead. They were gone. So, you know, all the more reason for Ahaz to trust in the Lord. In fact, both men died 2 years later in 732 BC. So they were in truth just smoldering stubs of firewood, vain threats for King Ahaz. Yes, God knew about their plot in great anger to invade Judah, to tear it apart, to divide it among themselves, to set up the son of Tabeel as king in Ahaz's place, but it would never occur. It's interesting, the city of Jerusalem was never destroyed that way. It was destroyed years later, a couple hundred years later, by the Babylonians, but that's because of incessant sin that went on. But at this particular time, Assyria was not going to destroy Jerusalem at all. In fact, it would be destroyed. 185,000 soldiers were going to be destroyed outside of the city of Jerusalem by God. So everything that Ahaz is fearing is a vain fear, because it's not going to come near him. So within 65 years, the northern kingdom of Israel, signified by its capital in Samaria and the tribe of Ephraim, would be too shattered to be a people, according to Isaiah 7, 7 to 9. So Ahaz was to trust God, heeding his warning. And the warning was, if you will not be sure, you cannot be secure. There's a play on words in the Hebrew there, and it's very close to the English. If you cannot be sure, you're not going to be secure. So the point is, you better get with it. Well, in fulfillment of the Isaiah 7, 8 prophecy, 65 years later, that's by 669 BC, Assyria had not only conquered Israel, and she did it in 722 BC. But Assyria deported many of Israel's people to Assyria, and they brought Assyrians and other foreigners to Samaria, shattering Israel so that she was unable to unite as a nation. In fact, they did this intentionally to keep Israel from rising up and opposing her. And of course, what happened, those people from Assyria came in, and they intermarried with some of the Jews, and that formed the Samaritans. That's where the idea of Samaritans come from. So though Ahaz was terrified at the threat of the Aram-Israeli alliance that in great anger wanted to invade Judah, to slay him and to set up a puppet king in his place, God called Ahaz to adopt the Lord's long-term view of events, to trust in him, the great deliverer, down through time to handle Ahaz's foes so as to destroy the two kings who threatened him and to make Israel an utterly shattered people, no longer a threat to Judah. Someone has said that worrying is really a waste of time because half of the things we worry about don't come to pass anyway. See? And if it does come to pass, worrying isn't going to help the situation. You know, so you might as well not worry and just think about what's the best way to deal with it. In this situation, everything this man was worrying about was false. Those two men were not going to come. They're going to be destroyed. They were not going to breach the wall. They were not going to kill Ahaz. They weren't going to set up somebody else. That wasn't going to happen. In fact, Assyria, whom Ahaz was thinking about asking to help, was already doomed. So God says, you know, don't be a sucker in this. Watch it. Trust me. So the application is, if our leadership role in an institution is threatened by even fierce foes, may we trust God, who gave us that role, to help us in the long term, regardless of the short term threat. For handling anxiety over all threats, may we keep focused on God's will for us long term, that we stay steadfast amid short term unrest. It's really valuable for us to view things from God's perspective, the long term perspective, rather than the short term perspective. If we don't, we can blow it by getting wiped out by the forest because we can't see the trees. Years ago, I was involved in farming, and when I was in my first pasture in Nebraska, I would farm, and every now and then I had to be involved in driving a tractor, and you wanted to drive the tractor in straight rows. And if you kept your eye on a fence post or something, you're fine. If you happen to pick a cow, you're in trouble because the cow would move and then you'd have this big curve behind you as you go down the field. So you had to be careful. But once you did that and you drove straight towards that item, you're all right. Now, if you took your eye off the item and looked down at what you were doing, it wouldn't be within 10, 15 feet. You'd already be messing up. You had to have the long-term view and look down at the fence post. If you kept your eye on the fence post while you drove the tractor, then you drove a straight line. And you plowed a straight line or hoed a straight line or whatever. The same is very true in regards to crises that we come up. A lot of times a crisis comes up and there's a temptation to be focused on the crisis and to come unglued. What we need to do is look beyond the crisis. There's a long-term plan that God has. And if we do that, then we have a tendency to be much more settled, much more stable. We don't make knee-jerk reaction decisions that are foolish, but we tend to make decisions that are much more stable, and things go a lot easier for us in life.